time you stop buying your
energy. How are we going to restore 15 to 20 million jobs?
I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We are national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM Radio. If you are in our broadcast area, I ask that you go to your telephone right now, invite family members and friends to tune in. And if you are on the internet, email someone, give them a call and ask them to tune in. You can listen to us anywhere in the USA or from anywhere in the world. I want to begin today by welcoming Rich Logis, who, as you know, is the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and also Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store. And Larkin Connolly is teaching his class for another 3 weeks, I believe, so he will not be with us today, but he will be with us as always in spirit. Gentlemen, I would like you to know that last week, our discussion at the end of the program, one national report would help, certainly received a lot of positive publicity. One of the people that responded to my commentary and to our broadcast said, yes, why don't we have one particular report that tells us how many people are actually working in the workforce? How many of those jobs are full-time jobs? How many are part-time? How many jobs were really added that month, and how many jobs were lost? And what is the total number of people that retired, people who were working, who retired, and then new jobs were available to put them into the workforce, not totally brand new jobs? Today, as I was listening to a radio broadcast, I did hear that they are now admitting that we're way up in the 20%, not the small amount of unemployment that they continue to announce, but we're way up there in 20%. And I believe that more and more is going to come out about what's happening in America, especially now that people are seeing where our industries have been hurt with all the new regulations, all the new taxes, all the new mandates that are being placed upon them. We are having some real, real difficult issues. But before I get to part of our subject of the day, I want to welcome Mark Andel. And how are you doing up there in Buffalo?
Yeah, the weather finally broke here in Buffalo. We're 30 degrees today, and it feels like 60. I'll probably see some bikinis and shorts in the out walking in the road here. But no, it's finally, you know, we needed it. We did get snow yesterday, and the winter's been very tough. Again, good for me with the snowplow sales and repairs, but tough on business all around. And I think that hurts the disposable income, you know, for people with the higher, bills and whatnot.
It really did. All the fuel bills and all of the everything that's surrounding the cold weather. I mean, we can't even find salt in most stores in the Philadelphia tri-state area.
It's funny you say that. I see that salt shortage. You've got, you know, propane prices rising, of course, natural gas, and but all across the board, right across the country. So it's been tough times, and I think people are waiting to get out of their houses. But we've been busy, and thankful. I've just visited one friend that runs a powder coat business that's extremely slow right now, and it reminds me just how tough it is being an entrepreneur. You know, it's feast or famine. You have all work more than you can handle, and then you get a couple 2-3 weeks of slump. You just got to stay positive and have faith.
Well, you know, as you say that, as I watched the Olympics and I saw the United States athletes competing with athletes from all over the world, I thought that's exactly what we're doing with the Buy American Made campaign, urging people to seek out American Made. Our athletes are accomplishing what our business people and our national leaders should have been doing for years in order to make us competitive with the global economy.
Mike, it's so funny you say that. The Olympics, I watch it too with my family, and I really appreciate 4 years for 4 minutes and how tough that is. But I thought the same thing because it's so patriotic. Your team is your country, that's all. You know, we all want to work global. We all want to compete. And it is, there's such a, you know, they're related so well. And I came in the other day, 2 days ago, and told my team, we got to tie more with the Olympics. And, you know, that thought process, and that's what we need to do in our country for work.
Yes, and in fact, our guest on the second half of today's broadcast is going to be speaking about an issue that I read about last night. Rich Lowe just sent me an article, but I'll wait till that time till we introduce the professor. But Rich, how are you doing down there in Florida?
We're good, guys. Thank you. You know, knock on my American-made wood on my desk here.
And how about on your guitar?
Only American made.
Okay, good.
Only American made. I've had my experience with some of the other imports. Henry Chaplinsky, our great audio engineer, he already knows how I feel about that. I can't get into it. The FCC will fine you if I really tell you what I think about the stuff coming in elsewhere. But everything's great, Danny. I'm really excited, Michael, about our guests coming on second half. I've got a little passage from a column that he wrote last month, and the headline as a preview for our listeners are the two major parties in trouble. So we're going to have this is going to be, I think it's going to be real. I've got a couple questions and some comments for him. Real excited to have him on. He was very appreciative of coming on. I told him, guys, that we'd be on our best behavior as usual.
So. Oh, absolutely. You know, as I'm going back to the Olympics, I mean, what the way they're competing with one another and competing with athletes from around the world, this is especially true with what we should be doing with manufacturing, since majority of what we do in the global economy are products, and we should be manufacturing at least one competitive product of everything that's available in the stores, and then make those products available all over the world, just like the all over the world is making their products available to us here in the United States. And it's really great to see how hard the athletes work, their skills to compete for the gold, the bronze, and the silver medals. And it would really be good to see if America's businesses could compete for some of our dollars by expanding and even upgrading their own products and services with the same commitment of the American athletes. I mean, Mark, you should understand that very well, knowing, you know, what it takes to run a business every day. And look how they work to do that 4 minutes of fame, looking for that medal to represent their country.
That's what I love. You know, they got so much commitment and their family backing and friends. It is very similar to entrepreneurism. It's beautiful to see, and it all does come down, but stuff happens. But, you pick yourself back up. There's just so much you could relate with the Olympics. One thing, Mike, I did have a meeting with my bank last week, and, another new guy. There's always a new guy. And then you got to try to explain your story and your work ethic and entrepreneurism and the gut feel we have and chances we take. And it just reminded me the paperwork that they're requesting nowadays compared to 10 years ago, basically how they really want to run your business, you know, for any dollar they give you. But it makes me feel for the new entrepreneur and the young guy how hard it is. And I wanted to talk to Larkin about this. And we talked about the SBA and people that could back you. But it's so hard to get a dollar. And I think we should talk about that more sometime on your show.
You're absolutely right, Mark. In fact, most of the newspaper articles that I'm reading here in the Philadelphia Inquirer day after day, and there is a special feature once a week on small businesses. This is the number one problem that we have. And I will blame part of this on all levels of leadership, whether it's business leaders, the stock market, or whatever, national elected leaders especially, they should be making these dollars more available with more security. Of course, you have to have the security to back them up, but
right.
Not to make it so hard you have to jump through 50 hoops to get a quarter, and by the time you jump through the 50 hoops, you're too exhausted and you're discouraged about being involved.
Yeah,
some of the bankers here ask for more information than I ever imagined I would hear or see people be asked for, and yet this is the way it is. It's the same thing with allowing our people to be competitive. How can they be competitive when they can't access dollars?
And this extra administration they want, so I said to them it would take me, you know, my office manager and girls, it would take probably 40 to 80 hours more a week to produce what they want now. I said, moving forward, and I'm not asking for nothing, I said, well, they said the investment in administrative costs will allow us to give you more money later, but that doesn't fit into my plan, being an entrepreneur in the tough economy. You know, we have things like the climate change. They want to put billions into our government. And then locally, our governor wants to, they just announced plans to, give college for our inmates. And I'm thinking, really, we can't even get off the ground as a business and keep the lights on. And I just don't know where their thinking process is.
No, it's really insane. As I mentioned last week, we got 29 million registered businesses in the USA. I wonder how many of those businesses could call in or write in or email and say they had a great experience with a bank trying to expand their business, trying to, do something to employ more people. It's not a good experience, and it's got to really come to an end. And I think, quite frankly, this next election, the midterm election, this should be an opportunity for more of these elected officials to be put on a carpet. Right now, they're still playing the old boy game. If I stay out of sight till September, I'm a shoo-in. But how about over the summer months? It might be time for all of us to start hitting these people on a regular basis, especially about helping small businesses get started. Now, a gentleman told me yesterday from Community College in Philadelphia, Chris Hess, that they have a new program for new entrepreneurs. It's free. And I'll probably be talking more about that. Maybe we'll even link it on our site. And we discussed that for a few minutes about money. And of course, when it comes to getting money, that's where the problem is. Why is that? You can go to all the classes that you want, but when it comes to actually getting the money to do the startup, it's almost impossible.
You know, and in Georgia next year, they're opening the first entrepreneurial school in the country. It's going to be a university, and I happen to know Clyde Strickland is a friend of mine that's involved with it, and we're going to get him on someday, Mike, in the near future. But one of the problems I want to talk to Clyde, I'm going to get a chance to see him this weekend, is for these people to come up with money to start, just like we're talking about. I mean, you always got your family and friends, and that's where it starts, but it's very, very, very hard to get off the ground. The days of trusting or take a chance, not that you don't have to show proper paperwork, you don't have to have collateral and things, but it's just getting very, very difficult to allow somebody to start up.
Yes, you know, in fact, this is such an important point. I would like to see us get together on this and maybe bring in the Small Business Administration and a few banks. We could devote few hours more, just not on Wednesday. We can do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of the daily broadcast to address this issue, because I really think that the banks should come up with a plan where you know what the situation is. In other words, if you have this type of documentation, you have this type of collateral, then you're going to be considered for this much money. Cut to the chase. Cut the red tape. Mark, if you went into a bank and said, I need to expand my business, you would like the bank to say, yes, if you have done this, this, and this, then you are eligible for the dollars you're seeking. If you haven't, then we're going to have to put you through to the next level of scrutiny. But that's not what they do. It's they take the applications, because as I go around, people tell me, I wanted to expand. I'm discouraged because, first of all the new mandates that I'm going through. Everything is now coming to me, you know, on a regular basis. I can't even fill it out. And the next form is coming up involved. Now the IRS is involved in the healthcare system. I had a call. In fact, I should mention this. I had a call from a person from the Affordable Care Act doing a survey. She's a compliance officer. She wanted to know how many employees we have. Are we going to explain all of the issues regarding the Affordable Care Act and all? This is the second time I've been contacted. These are exactly what I said to her. I said, let me ask you something. Are you paid to do your job And she said, oh, yes, I'm here. And I said, well, I'm paid to do my job, and I don't have time for this type of survey. Put it in the mail. Well, I have to do it over the phone. I said, no, you don't. Put it in the mail to me, and if somebody wants to fill it out from the board or whatever, they will do it. Otherwise, I don't have time. No matter, I don't care if it's presidents or kings and queens, I don't have time to do surveys. And that's what they're doing on a banking level. You got to present all this information to the people, and then some schmo looks at it and said, well, you didn't fill in number 97 on page 53, and so you're not eligible.
Exactly. That extra administration, that's where I'm figuring they want me to have 40 to 60 hours more a week to pull off with paperwork that they need. I'm a business. I've been in business 29 years. And if it's difficult for me being an established business, I just feel, again, and to spark this economy, the entrepreneurship and small business has to be able to grow. And I think they've got to open these gates up and make it easier, you know, have the proper backing. But maybe there's some type of government relationship with the bank that helps entrepreneurs specifically.
Absolutely. This is an issue. Mark, if you can come up with some ideas, I will ask Larkin, maybe Rich can participate. I would like to get in Dave Dixon from the Small Business Administration, maybe get two or three people from banks to come in, and let's talk about the real bottom line to help new businesses come about. Yeah. Gentlemen, I must take a break for a minute. And as you know, we have a huge ethnic audience on this broadcast. And today, one of our groups is going to be coming out, and we stand in solidarity with them as they stood in solidarity with us when Poland was fighting for freedom. As you see on TV, there is a lot of violence taking place in the Ukraine. And this is very unfortunate because those people want to be part of the European Union. They want to move forward. They want to trade with the world. They want the freedom to move around and be part of the global economy. Today at 1 p.m. on this Wednesday, February the 19th, the Ukrainian community will be gathering at Independence Hall, the Cradle of Liberty, at 5th Street, and they are asking everyone to come out and support them if you are able. That's today, the 19th, at 1 p.m., and that's on 5th and Market Streets in Philadelphia. There will be a second rally for peace from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Ukrainian Educational and Cultural Center. That's at 700 North Cedar Road in Jenkintown, Pennsylvania. Polonia will be with them there today at 1 p.m., and if you see me there, let me know that you tune into the broadcast. Also, I would like to acknowledge greetings to all and thank you for supporting American Workers Radio from Michael Steinman, attorney at law, and also from Polka Deli, located at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue, and from Mr. Jan Majewski and everyone from Giorgio Foods, a symbol of quality since 1928. And the Philadelphia Net Cost Market is located at 117,001 Busselton Avenue at the Leo Mall in Northeast Philadelphia. I encourage you to stop by and see the great selection of products they offer. And Mr. Frank Spula, National President of the Polish National Alliance, America's largest ethnic fraternal life insurance organization, also asks you to support American workers. And for all of your dental needs, remember Dr. Eva Machak has two offices in Philadelphia to serve you. You can give her a call at 215-739-2787. Also, Mr. Leon Mankowski, attorney at law, has his office at 2624 East Allegheny Avenue in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia. You can give him a call at 215-739-8521. And as you know, as we move forward trying to promote small businesses, we have Tri-State Media Network. It specializes in advertising businesses throughout our Philadelphia and Tri-State area. On radio, we are interconnected with newspapers and internet advertising. You can visit them on the web by going to Tri-State Media Network. www.trycalls.com or check them out on Facebook at facebook.com/Tri-State Media Network. You know, gentlemen, for 200 years, America was the world's leading force of innovation, technology, and also job skills. People from around the world flocked to the United States of America because we were the place it was happening. And of course, Rich, as you always say, America is still the world's number one economy, but now we're importing more items than we're manufacturing here in the USA, and that has had a very bad inflection on our economy. It's been just terrible, and our workers are hurt. As you look around when you go shopping, you can see without question the urgency of restoring America's industries so that we can supply the products that we buy on a day-to-day basis. And as you know, when I go around, I certainly make it known that I am a supporter of American made. And the people at the stores, at the cash registers, I ask them, are any people speaking up? And I am really pleased to say their response is absolutely. So as we promote 2014 as the year of American made, I really think it's the perfect time to revitalize all of America's industries and our job skills. That's through our schools, also through our training programs. I mean, there's just too many welfare-related programs, too many entitlements, but not enough training programs so that people don't need those entitlements. And that's...
Michael, excuse me, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I mean, that's all I wanted to say.
It's great that we are number one, that we have been number one. It is cause for some celebration. However, to use we're talking about the Olympics, we'll use a sports analogy, or Mark, we'll use a business owner analogy. You know, when you're number one, everyone's gunning for you. And what we've seen over the last several decades, as I've mentioned on the show before and I mention all the time in conversation, what our national leaders lacked, in my opinion, was foresight. So they lacked the analytical skills or whatever skills were necessary in determining that other nations around the world, large nations, were growing, were developing. So going forward, whatever's happened in the past is done. What's done is done. So moving forward, are we electing? See, the question that really the electorate has to ask itself, which Professor Davis, I'm sure, is going to address, is are we electing officials who seem to get it? And we'll try to position America for more growth in the future, as opposed to just slogging as a part-time job economy where, you know, we're spending trillions a year in health care, wars in the trillions of dollars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Who are we electing? Because our elections, because we are a republic where our officials are democratically elected, our elections influence everything. And because they do influence everything on the federal, state, and local levels, We need to understand something, Michael, that when we talk about analyzing and inspecting what goes on, it doesn't end with voting. It's where it begins.
Right.
And that's where it starts. It doesn't end there, however. And this is how I found Professor Davis when he comes on. I found him because of the fact that we in the United States, we have as much, if not more, access to information than anywhere else in the world.
You know, Rich, as you're saying that, as I try to get in touch with some of these officials, and this is not only now, at a time I know they're in Pennsylvania, they're working on the budget, but so often I try to speak to people about even some of our constituents, our neighborhood situations. We have changing neighborhoods. We have many people who need services, and they're pulled away from those services because the money is directed into other areas of supposed more important need. They just don't care. There is no way to get in touch with most of these people. You call, they say you're put on the call list. Somebody will get back to you from the staff. They're so busy. And each and every time the conversation is over, I say to myself, what exactly are they doing that they are so busy? I don't see their names listed on any kind of legislation. I don't see them in the forefront on the television or on the radio where they're saying we're going to do something very special to make sure that we get our jobs back, which is the most important thing that we can do for the American people. I mean, our security is good and all, but how about independence, personal job security, self-sufficiency? Rich, these people simply don't have an idea what is going on. Many of those older Republicans and Democrats and independents, they're just buying time to retire and walk into the sunset. Some of them should have been walking into the sunset, maybe over there in Florida or California, walking the beaches for some time, and they haven't been able to do it. They don't want to do it because that is like winning the rock star ticket to heaven by getting reelected each and every time. And when the professor comes on, I hope that we'll be able to discuss this issue. But Mark, I want to ask you this. I keep hearing on television programs that there is a new program in New York where they're giving a 10-year tax abatement if you open a business in New York. Do you know much about that?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because it's been brought up to me a few ways this week. Somebody reached out from either Massachusetts or Delaware that they want to know how this plan has helped me, and they want to know how they could, you know, start it up in their state. And the funny thing is, it's never helped me yet. I've never got the tax relief. They're talking about this 10-year plan, and I've been told it's for a startup business in a college, university on their grounds. We can't find enough information. It's funny. I'm going to be studying it now, Mike, a little more because I'd love to get help, and it's just not true. This commercial at this point.
Everybody well, see, I thought there was two parts of the commercial. The first commercial says, "Come and locate in New York, and you get a 10-year tax abatement." The other one says, "New York is now open for business, and all of our businesses are expanding," and, you know, it gives you the idea that they're really going out of their way to give you incentives, a person like yourself who's been up and at it for 20 years.
Yeah, I believe it's called Startup New York, and I just was going to look it up again. Now, the odd thing is it's said that it has to be on a university, a college university. So I'm not sure, you know, maybe a food restaurant would open there or possibly like that. But I will gather more information because I'm very interested. No, it's never helped me yet, and I can't believe that. But
well, I'd like to know more about it because I'd like to even, Mark, if you find out, I would like to have someone from the program come on our broadcast. And we would be able to discuss it. Hopefully other states would get the idea and pick up the program.
Absolutely. Yeah, let me find out because it's something I don't know much about, but people have been asking me, and it's just it's kind of odd the way the commercial runs and what's realistic and real.
Do you see the commercial in your area?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it a few times.
Okay, because they play it at several times.
They play a lot of yours. Okay.
They play it several times, so I guess maybe they're trying to attract businesses. Now, if it's only for a university-level setting, well, then nobody, you know, is going to really want to do that. But if it's to move to New York where you're going to get a 10-year tax abatement, that is not a bad deal, especially if you're living on the border of New York or up, you know, further up in Jersey or whatever. It's not a bad deal to get started in the New York State.
Yeah, I will get you more information, Mike.
Okay, now, I believe that Henry is trying to get our special guest. He hasn't been able to contact him yet. But, Rich, have you been following the Olympics?
I've caught glimpses here or there. I saw the highlights from the hockey game. And yeah, I wish all of our athletes well.
Well, you know, when I looked at it, I kept saying to everybody around me, I said, now there's the competition America needs with its businesses and its job skills. I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, those guys work for a couple years training themselves, and they're really amateur, you know, they can't be professionals. They're getting the medal, and then maybe they would be able to move on to some show program or whatever in the future. But those athletes do a lot of work, and for very little. They go for sponsorships. So I compliment them. But how do we get our American businesses to have that same tenacity about them?
It's constant competition. There are trials where you compete. There are pre-Olympic games. And I'm sure that some of our listeners know the exact structure much better than I do. But there are a number of pre-Olympic competitions. And then, of course, you get to the games themselves where you have the best in the world. I mean, you're competing against those who have been honing their skills for, in some cases, years, since they were just little kids. And imagine that level of competition in elections. Oof, that would be something.
Oh, man, that's what I'm looking for. You know, I've been sitting quiet in Pennsylvania for a bit now, and I'm waiting till after the primary is done to really speak my mind on certain local issues. I'll be doing that even during my regular programs, not strictly here on American Workers. But some particular candidates that have run for re-election have done virtually nothing. They're uncontactable, and I think we have to start speaking about it because they are representing neighborhoods where our social service agency also butts up against, and yet we can't get any response from these people. They're always at caucuses, always at meetings, always at town watches. And yet when I talk to the town watch people, they say, I've never seen the man physically ever. He's using this as a way to make him sound much more important than he is. So we have to do something about that. But as we're hoping to connect with our visitor, let me just say a few thank yous again to some of our sponsors. And I want to say a great thank you to Mr. Joseph Drobot, who is the national president of the PRCUA. This is a national life insurance company, and they have been offering life insurance plans and annuities for a long time. They started in 1873. They are located in all 50 states. For additional information, you can give their Philadelphia area office at 215-425-3807. And if you need any type of insurance, Karen Janod of State Farm is there to assist you. Give her a call at 215-862-5490. And Dr. Wojciech Zinn and Everest Dental are located at 9892 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia. No matter what you're looking for in the way of dental needs, Dr. Zinn is there to assist you. Give him a call at 215-671-0188. And the Polish and Slavic Federal Credit Union is a very special organization. In fact, you can do banking online from anywhere in the world, and you can check them out. They have many offices. You can check them out on the internet by going to psfcu.com. That stands for Polish Slavic Federal Credit Union. And also, the Polish American Travel Service is located at 2714 East Allegheny Avenue in Philadelphia. If you're tired of the snow and you want to get off and out, going out to someplace across the USA, maybe to Mark's place there in Buffalo, or you want to go across the world, you can call Polish American Travel Service at 215-634-3396. And also greetings from Mr. Chester Kshanowski, who is the proprietor of Serena's Auto Body Shop, with two locations in the Philadelphia area to serve you. You can give them a call at 215-535-6606. And also greetings to you and yours from the Sugar House Casino located at 1001 Delaware Avenue in Philadelphia. Check them out on the internet at sugarhousecasino.com. And don't forget, if you are in Northeast Philadelphia and you want to have a great European experience, go to the Philadelphia Net Cost Market at 117,001 Busselton Avenue. That's at the Leo Mall, just off Byberry Road in Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia. And Yolanda Konopatska DeCipio, attorney at law, handles all legal matters. I encourage you to give her a call at 215-423-4824. Well, Rich, tell me what else is happening with you. Henry is trying to put a call in now to our guest, and hopefully we'll have him on in a few minutes. What is happening? What is happening as a result of what with the article that you read about Professor Davis?
Well, the main article, if we can't connect with Professor Davis, I'll reschedule to have him on, Michael. So what it was talking about, and I can provide the link, this is something that we can put on perhaps the homepage, is what he said was the electorate's disenchantment with our two major political parties, and talking about whether America feels that they're ready for a third party, not really ready so much, but prepared for. One of the things that I say all the time, and I would bring this up to Professor Davis, is if you ask the majority of people, guys, okay, Mark, if you ask Michael, you ask anyone, if you ask the majority of people, they'll identify themselves as independents, I believe. I think they would. I think they would identify themselves as independents. But it doesn't really translate into votes, and that's a question that I think is answered in numerous ways. One of the things about, I think, the Republican-Democrat two-party duopoly is I think that it has very brilliantly created a lesser of two evil beast that is fueled a lot by fear, a lot of fear that I would say I believe is quite irrational. You know, the notion that two are bad, but one's a little better. You know, the fact is, lesser of two evils, guys, is still evil. And the lesser of one, my lesserofoneevil.com site that I'm in the process of working on is going to talk specifically about what I think are some reforms to get elections more competitive. Today the theme is competition, right? We're talking about business, Olympics. Well, why isn't that applicable in our election? Why is it not? And of course, if in my conversations with many of my very extreme party voter friends, either always one side or always the other side, and it always starts with a Rich you don't understand. That's always how it's prefaced. But then it evolves into, what I call is an irrational fear of having to take one over the other, because moving from the two parties is going to result in it's going to somehow, we're going to regress, we're going to move backwards, and I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that whatsoever. There's a reason George Washington did not believe in political parties. He's our only president to not be a member of a political party.
You know, Rich, I don't know if you saw this. Maybe, Mark, you saw it. But as they were doing some of these late-night shows, they went on the street and started asking people who was the first president, how long ago was Abraham Lincoln president. Did people understand? They were offering condolences to Mrs. Roosevelt on the passing of the late president last week and all. Did you see any of those reports?
I'm sure that I'm going to get the after, I'll see the Sports Center highlights, I'm sure. Someone will undoubtedly get them to me.
Unbelievable, the responses.
Yeah, I'm sure it's quite funny, actually, but
But it's, you know, when you, the commentator asks the person, you know, what level of schooling they had and all, and they say, well, I'm a graduate of this and that. And then they say, what do you know about George Washington? And they say, well, he's on a dollar bill. What else, what else do you know about him? He's on, he's on money. Wasn't he something years ago? I mean, it's almost unbelievable.
I've seen some of that, Mike, back on Jay Leno or however, but some is scary, and they've got the degrees and whatnot, and, we talk about common sense, too, sometimes, but some of the answers are so out there, you just can't believe it, and you should have some history, at least know who the...
Well, part of the problem is I think that they took civics out of the schools. And now as a result of that, everybody is suffering because nobody really knows much about the map, let alone what's located in those various countries. And
Michael, now, the fact is that political intercourse in the United States on an intellectual level is, I think, probably pretty low. I mean, I don't have a measurement I've used or a scale, but... When major elections at all levels, state, local, federal, are duopolized as they are, and really theoretically it's really one monopoly because I don't really think there is a lesser of two evils. I'm not suggesting, and I haven't, that each party of the two gets everything wrong, but ultimately, as Larkin pointed out last week, from his meeting, the reason that the two parties really where the differences become even more blurred and where the similarities really manifest themselves is in the fact that the two parties have the same goal, which is to get elected, and stay elected.
That's the main thing, to stay elected.
There's generally no term limits, not for every position, although you'll see in places like New York City recently, right? Two elections ago, where that was changed, and Mayor Bloomberg at the time was able to run for a third. So generally, there's no term limits, and there's unlimited amounts of money that can fund elections. And of that unlimited amount of money, the government, by its own admission, just as an example, Obama v. Romney, $6 billion spent, and the Federal Election Commission admitted it didn't know where $400 million came from.
Right.
So what that tells me is it's probably $400 million, guys, from other countries that influenced the outcome of the election of the most powerful position on earth. When you really think of it that way, that's pretty unnerving.
Yep, you're right.
So what is the answer? What's the solution?
The solution is what I've been saying.
Talk about it.
What I've been saying for a long time is we need a third and maybe even a fourth party. Because right now, we are just not where we're supposed to be, and no one is concerned. I believe the professor must have been in a class, and he is now coming on the phone with us, and I'm going to ask Rich Logis if he would be able to introduce the professor, and maybe we could be able to hear some of the good feelings of the professor, which I've read a little information about him, and I'm impressed. Welcome, Professor Davis.
Thank you.
Rich, I'm going to ask you to do the introduction.
Sure. Thanks, Michael. Professor, good morning. This will be continued here. Just real quick, Michael, I found Professor Davis from a column he did last month. The title, Are the Two Major Parties in Trouble? Listeners can find it on Deseret News, not Deseret, Deseret News, D-E-S-E-R-E-T News.com. And, Professor, I want to first thank you for being on. I hope this is going to be the first of many appearances. I want to read a quick passage from your column. I want to make a comment and ask a question. You say in the column, independents are rare in American politics. In 2012, no non-major party candidate received even 1% of the vote. Ross Perot was supported by 19% in 1992, 8% in 1996. Since then, no non-major party candidate has earned more than 1% of the vote, with the exception of Ralph Nader in 2000. Despite the poor electoral performance of independents and third-party candidates, Americans today more than ever want alternatives to the two major parties. A comment and a question. My first comment, Professor, is this, and this is in no way meant critically of what you wrote, but I feel like I've been reading that passage I just read you. I feel like I've been reading that for a decade plus. I feel like I read about it in 2000. People said, yeah, I'm ready for to challenge two parties. I feel like I read it in 04, in 08, and in 012. Why do you think, what are some of the gauges, measurements that you're basing why you think Americans more than ever are ready to challenge these two major parties? I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I think there are at least a couple of indicators. One is that there are increasing numbers of Americans who are identifying themselves as independents. That means that they tell pollsters that they don't belong to or affiliate with either of the two major parties. I mean, the reality is that not all these people who claim to be independents are really independent. What we found is that they tend to be people who kind of lean one way or the other. But the fact that there are more of them who are saying, I don't want to publicly affiliate with a party, suggests some independence, some dissatisfaction with the two major parties. Another is the numbers of people who say the country is going in the wrong direction. That's at extremely high levels. And then a third indicator is that there are increasing numbers of people who are saying that they don't think that members of Congress ought to be reelected. And what's interesting is they're saying my member of Congress, more of them are saying my member of Congress should not be reelected. So what happened in the past is people would say, you know, we should throw out people in Congress and start over again. But then they'd say, well, but my member of Congress is different. My member of Congress is okay. What increasingly they're saying now is maybe even my member of Congress is someone who ought to be thrown out as well. That suggests a lot of dissatisfaction. And then there's obviously the America Elect effort in 2012 that they had some big name support. They had some money to do something with. They fumbled. But the fact that they even existed and tried is an indication of dissatisfaction.
Professor, what do you think of this Tea Party?
Well, the Tea Party has for the most part, not been a third party. It has stayed within the Republican Party, and they've done this purposely because they want to influence the Republican Party. They know it's a major party. That's how they can win elections, by being connected with a major party. And so it's a sort of a shrewd move to change the Republican Party from within to make it much more conservative, much more populist, so that then they can take the brand, the Republican brand, and keep the brand and get people who may not agree with their views to still vote for their candidates. So in terms of, you know, what we're talking about here, third parties, they've determined not to do what, you know, Ross Perot did. They've determined to stay within the Republican Party and to move it. Now, if they were to move out of the Republican Party, they know that the consequence would be that Democrats would win elections, because then Republicans would be split between the two.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. But that seems to be the only way to make a third party viable. Right now, we have the two-party system. If they're at the negotiating table for any reason and one party walks away, that means the negotiating table only has one person, and one person or one party does not negotiate with itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And Professor, your comment about independence, funny, a few minutes before you came on, I said the same thing. And I've been saying that recently because of other quite enlightened, like-minded people who have suggested that to me and said, Rich, you ever notice how people usually call themselves independents? And I think, yeah, you know, you're right, and it doesn't really translate in votes. And I think your example, and I mention Ross Perot all the time, regardless of one's opinions about Perot, the fact is the guy was an immensely influential alternative candidate, right? And Professor, correct me, you're the erudite, knowledgeable professor whom I'm going to defer to here, but I remember from years after the 92 election, Perot just scared the wits out of the two parties. And it went, the debates went from the League of Women Voters to the Commission on Presidential Debates. And then when it went to the commission run by, of course, Republicans and Democrats, all of a sudden, miraculously and arbitrarily, if you were now you had to poll at 15% to get into the debates, whereas it was at 5% when Perot ran in 92. And then in 96, Dole and Clinton basically cut a deal. Dole didn't want Perot in the debates, and Clinton was so far ahead that he figured having Perot might harm him. So Perot, right, so then you saw where the duopoly further concentrated itself after that 92 election. That's really a very significant election in the context of what we're talking about.
Well, yeah, Ross Perot affected policy in the sense that the issues that he raised became more important issues because he raised them and because he had 19% of the vote. That's certainly nothing to sneeze at for either party. They knew that there was a group of people out there who were so disaffected by the two major parties that they're willing to vote for an independent candidate. And so particularly when it came to the issue of the national debt and the budget deficit, Perot was quite influential. The two parties actually came to a deal in the mid-1990s to cut the deficit or cut the budget to hopefully cut the debt over time. And for 2 years in the 1990s, we had a surplus. It's hard to imagine now. But I attribute at least some of that to the Ross Perot. Now, you might ask, can that be repeated? In order for a third-party candidate to be successful today, they're going to have to be someone who's well-known, so someone who's got a reputation already, and well-admired, someone who has money or access to money. Likely, they have money. And someone who is sort of not connected with the that doesn't have a lot of baggage from the past that can be hooked on to them as they run. That's a hard formula to find, because if someone has been involved in politics and government and has some political experience and therefore might be able to, you know, be credible as a presidential candidate, they've likely been involved in one of the two major parties and they have some baggage. So it would need to be someone who comes out of one of the two parties, well respected, is able to be seen as independent, is able to draw from both parties in terms of voters, and also has a lot of money. And there, just not a lot of people. I think, you know, the Michael Bloomberg comes to mind as a possible, because he's well known. He has lots of money, and that's why he was actually being and he has political experience.
And one thing I must say, Professor, that Ross Perot, during his time, he was able to help steer the political agenda of the time.
Yes, he was.
That was important. And I know that for many years, the American people accepted the way business was done. They just didn't, you know, thought everything was going to be fine. But today, with modern communication, social media, Americans are discouraged, really, with the way the country's headed. And now, as they see very clearly that for more than 30 years, we lost tens of thousands of manufacturers and jobs. They located overseas to avoid taxes and all placed upon them by our good friends in Washington. People are discouraged, and we see Americans want some kind of a change. How do they bring that change about is the big question.
Well, that's a very good question. Civic engagement, I think at a variety of levels. I think even before that is just optimism about the future. It does bother me that people think that things are getting worse. It's hard to get much done when you have a pessimistic attitude about the future. But also, I think people need to feel like what they do makes a difference. And there we have a problem, because there's that sense of lack of political efficacy, that sense that people are not really able to make much of a difference if they can evolve. That's not true. I think they really can make a difference. We see this in movements. We see this in the Occupy Wall Street. That focused attention on income inequality. We see the Tea Party that focused attention on the national debt. These movements, even Ross Perot's was a movement. They can actually make a difference in affecting the agenda.
Professor, I don't doubt what you say, that it's quite a monumental task, and the duopoly, as I've said for quite a long time, it's up to this point an insatiable beast that feasts on fear, unlimited campaign contributions, lesser of two evil voter conditioning that has all been a brilliant plan by the duopoly. It's worked marvelously. But I'm not, and I would ask, when I talk in this context of this topic, I think collectively, if the United States electorate, if our voters can shift their way of thinking from the baby steps mentality, okay, because I say baby steps are for babies. I understand that things won't happen overnight, but it's really you point out about movement, and I really think we could shake things up significantly just in one election. I mean, I think it would only take one election to any election was all Republican Democrats. Perot had that impact. You know, you look at a guy like Jesse Ventura when he won the governorship in Minnesota. You look at to this day, you know, 2014. I mean, we're almost 14 years after the 2000 election, and Ralph Nader is still talked about, right? He's still talked about as costing Gore the election, which has been proven time and time and time again to just be, you know, political nonsense, but still talked about. There was an impact. There was an influence.
Rich and Professor Mark Andel, I am going to have to tell you that I can't beat the clock again. Our time here on 860 is coming to an end, but Professor, we would love to have you back at another time when you are free, and we would love to do the whole hour with you, because there are a lot of things that I would like to ask you as a person who's done quite a bit of research and has done several articles to see what you would like to see happen here in the USA that would change us around and get our people enthused again, back to work, and, you know, see what we can do to improve our economy.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm sorry I couldn't spend more time.
Well, we will call upon you again. I want to thank you. Mark Andel has been on the line. Mark, we'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Okay,
and
thanks,
Rich,
Professor.
Thank you so much. Until next Wednesday at 11, or this Saturday at 11, I wish all of you the very best.